Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. A salute to the cerebral. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I mean, I felt like our pace was good early. It's just that third quarter, I feel like it just really killed us, you know what I mean? 18-0 run, if we can't score no baskets, you're not going to win no game.
That's pretty simple logic from Kawhi Leonard, isn't it? Yeah, but never mind Kawhi for the minute. Like clockwork, we're kind of at the peak Kyle Lowry stage of this NBA playoff series, aren't we? I mean, you always seem to get there at some point. 2-for-9 in game one, 4-for-11 in game two, fouled out with just under 4 minutes left in the game. This team staring at an 8-point deficit. Now, keep in mind, this was in the middle of a run where the Raptors would miss 16 of 22 field goals. I mean, look, we can sit here and talk all day about NBA officiating, but I prefer to adopt Marc Gasol's strategy. Deal with it, adapt to how the game is being called, adapt to how the game is being played. Now, look, it's true that the whistle was way too intrusive Sunday night. I mean, did you see social media? NBA players were weighing in, for God's sake. But, I mean, that doesn't explain how Lowry fouled out. You know, gambling with five fouls and, you know, more or less attempting to slap the ball out of Boogie Cousins' hands. And, look, this is not to blame Lowry for the Raptors' loss. All right? As my colleague Arden Zwelling notes in his column on Sportsnet.ca, I mean, you can blame that loss on a never-before-seen NBA Finals run of 20 points. I mean, the last bucket of the first half, first 18 points of the second, and everything that was involved in that. But here's the thing. Lowry's absence turned Fred VanVleet into even more of a regular. And while he was one of the stories in Game 1, he choked off four of his last five shots in the fourth in Game 2, when head coach Nick Nurse surely could have used an extra option with Klay Thompson out nursing a hamstring injury. And so the Warriors had home mission accomplished. They've got a split, buying themselves perhaps another game and, oh, I don't know, five extra days for Kevin Durant to heal if he still needs it. They were in fumes at the end, to be sure, and no one more so than Steph Curry, but well, at least Steph Curry was out there swinging, right? Which is more than can be said for Kyle Lowry. You don't win the title without knocking out the champ. You don't win the title on a TKO. And not having Lowry available made the task too difficult in the end.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
All right, welcome to the Jeff Blair Show. It's good to be back with you 9 to 12. All day today, we've got Raptors Warriors Game 5 ticket giveaway. So here's what you're going to do. Listen all day for the keywords to text us for your chance at lower bowl tickets to Game 5 of the NBA Finals. You can text 590-590 right now with the keyword Lowry 7. That's all one word with a capital L. For your shot at seeing the Raptors in their first ever NBA Finals. Host the Golden State Warriors in Game 5. Go to sportsnet.ca/590 for full details. And it's kind of fitting that Lowry 7 is the keyword today. So much happened in last night's loss. I'm not going to hang on Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry wasn't available. when the Raptors needed him. Now, it's the second time he's fouled out of a game in the postseason. Of course, the Raptors won the other game. It was in overtime. But what I found really interesting about this is that this was a topic of conversation with Nick Nurse before the game. Nick Nurse was asked specifically about Kyle Lowry and the amount of fouls he's picked up during this postseason. And Nick, you know, Nick Nurse admitted it was something of a concern. And we've been down this road before, right? I mean, we've talked about this a lot in Toronto. It's not just Toronto. They talked about it in Houston. They talked about it in Portland. They're probably talking about it in Milwaukee. I mean, when you lose in the NBA playoffs, when you lose a game or a series in the NBA playoffs, more often than not, officiating comes out under the spotlight. Now, I didn't think last night's game was anything too egregious. I thought the Golden State Warriors managed to hang in. Draymond Green had four fouls. DeMarcus Cousins had five fouls. Played well with those. Even their bench players. Shaun Livingston had three fouls. And yet they managed to keep it together. So I'm not going to blame that loss on officiating. I'm certainly not going to blame it on Kyle Lowry. What I'm going to blame it on more than anything else is something Steph Curry talked about, and that's the DNA of a champion. You take a look at the Warriors at the end of that game and how hurt they were. No Klay Thompson. Of course, they don't have any Kevin Durant. Steph Curry had finished the game with something. It was the flu, whatever. They lost Kevon Looney with a shoulder contusion. There's some indication it might even be a sprained shoulder. Andre Iguodala had to leave and come back. It was literally a tale of a defending champion that just refused to give in. And more than anything else, a defending champion who kind of knew, I mean, they knew they had one run in them, right? And Andre Iguodala talked about this after the game. He said, we knew we had one run in us. Now, he didn't know it was going to be 18-0, but he said you could get that feeling once that run started. He said, we felt it before in this locker room, he said. I felt it before on the court. Get some defensive stops, limit the other team to one shot, and things just start going and it kind of snowballs. So that's where we are. The Golden State Warriors, 109-104 winners over the Toronto Raptors. The series is tied one game apiece. This is what Golden State wanted to do. And as I mentioned in my little preamble, in the very least, this might buy Steve Kerr a little extra time to let Kevin Durant heal up. Eric Smith is our Raptors radio voice on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Eric Smith joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Eric, thanks so much for doing this, man. It was quite a game last night, and I know hearing some of the comments during the game and some of the post game comments as well. It's a cliche, but it's a cliche that I think holds true in the NBA. I mean, you have to knock out the defending champion, don't you? You can't just get cute and land body blows. You've got to knock them out, and the Raptors weren't able to do that.
No, I agree with you, and I mean, maybe to kind of stay on that sort of boxing theme, if you look back to Game 1, I thought the Raptors did not only a solid job, Jeff, of delivering that final punch or the final punches, but they were able to withstand the barrage that Golden State was trying to throw at them. Even in the second half and especially in that third quarter, the Warriors, statistically speaking, percentage-wise, everything else, are the number one third-quarter team in the NBA this year, regular season playoffs. And if you think back to Game 1, it was in the third quarter when Golden State tried to make their run, but the Raptors had the answer. They were able to punch back and sort of stay off the ropes. And their double-digit lead, I would think, was down to 7 or 8 at the end of 3, but the Raptors never allowed Golden State to get much closer. I think that was when you saw, some of those timely buckets from Patrick McCaw or from Fred VanVleet in that first game. And Toronto just able to withstand the blows that were coming from the champ. But last night, not the case. They tried to fight back. They had it down to a two-possession game. They had it down to a one-possession game. But I was listening for the last, you know, 5-6 minutes there to all your comments, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. You can't look at the officials. Yeah, there was a blown technical foul that should have been called with Steph Curry jumping onto the floor and onto the sidelines in the middle of a play with no timeout. I think there was a missed goaltend on a Siakam bucket. All those things. Any calls, any whistles you want, no ref was a part of the 18 or 20 to 0 run or the 23 to 3 run, however you want to break it down. The Raptors had an abysmal first 5-6 minutes of the third quarter, and that's what ultimately sank them, and that's what Golden State does, and Toronto could not find the counterpunch last night.
It really is remarkable, isn't it, the way that the Warriors' MO with third quarters. Like, it has to say something about, you know, what Steve Kerr says, his ability to make adjustments, the ability of his and his coaching staff to make adjustments. But also, I think it says a lot about sort of the guts of, and when I say guts, I'm not talking about courage. I'm just talking about like the inner stuff of a team that's been there before, isn't it?
Yeah, they don't cave under the pressure. They don't get, you know, distracted or scared by the moment. You know, think of the Western Conference Finals, down 15 plus in 3 straight games to Portland, winning all 3 games and sweeping the Blazers. That's a team that has seen a lot. And I think as well, for all the jokes and memes and punchlines, which I think are ridiculous, about blowing the 3-1 series lead, this is still a champ that was a 3-1 series lead from being a back-to-back-to-back-to-back champ. 4 straight in their 5th right now. They've seen a ton from this, and I think they learned from that 3-1. What have they done since then? Come back with back-to-back championships, and now here they are in a 5th straight, tied 1-1 heading home. I think they've learned from that 3-1. They've learned from the moments that they've had together over the years. And I don't think that, you know, they're nervous or scared when they go down 10, 12, even 15 points because they know, and we've already seen it, certainly last night, and arguably we saw it in game one as well, they can rip off a 9-0, 12-0 run, 15-0 run, or 18-0 run in minutes, in a fraction of the time that other teams can because of the firepower that they have, even without Kevin Durant, the firepower that they have.
You know, it's interesting. As you were talking, I was thinking about that third quarter and sort of how, in some ways, I think the seeds of that third quarter run were sown in the second quarter. You know, you look at that second quarter. Now, you know, Kawhi Leonard got 7 trips to the line, which is great. He was 5 for 5, but he only had 1 field goal. And, you know, you look at that carrying over into the third quarter. Kawhi had 6 field goals. It was almost as if they had difficulty getting the ball to Kawhi. And I'm going to credit Golden. I'm sure Golden State had something to do with that. I mean, they switched up a number of coverages on Kawhi. But it seemed to me that one of the issues in the second quarter and certainly the third quarter was they just didn't get the ball to Kawhi enough.
Which seems crazy when you think about the number of appearances he had at the stripe and you know, his final point total as well. But I generally agree with you, but I will say, yeah, I think a lot of it was Golden State. I mean, you think back to the number of, if I'm not mistaken, Jeff, I think if you have the numbers in front of you, Kawhi had 5 turnovers in the game. He was double and triple teamed a ton and forced into passing out a lot because they were trying to take away his effectiveness wherever he was on the floor and kind of make somebody else beat us. And certainly somebody or multiple somebodies did in game one, but you didn't really have that secondary punch from anybody last night outside of perhaps even Van Vliet, but his second half numbers until a bit of a surge there in the fourth quarter, they weren't great compared to what he was doing in the first. I just think that the Raptors didn't have enough offensive answers for what Golden State was doing. I said this to the guys in the postgame last night, and I know I've used this line with you before. I want to be cautious not to have the red and white pom-poms here, but I think a lot of what Toronto did last night or didn't do was as much a product of their ineffective offense as it was Golden State's defense. I don't want to take away a lot from what Golden State did and say that, oh, they didn't play well. They did, and they were dialed in. But at the same time, I can think of open, wide open corner threes for Siakam, for Danny Green from the wing, who albeit did have a huge shot towards the end, for Marc Gasol straight away from the top of the arc. And I'm just talking about free balls, let alone from shots in the paint and layups and whatnot. I can think of 7-8 shots just off the top of my mind right now that were wide open looks for the Raptors. And Jeff, I'm not going to sit here and say, give me all 7 of those, give me all 8. Give me 3. Give me half of them. And we're talking about perhaps a different game. And, you know, and I often say that even about free throws when a team has a brutal shooting night from the free throw line. You know, they miss 12. Don't give me all 12. Give me 6, and what's the score? Give me half of those misses, and what's the score? What's the situation? And that's where I think shot-making or lack thereof for the Raptors last night did them in as much as anything else that we want to credit Golden State for doing. And that's why I still think you've got to have your head held fairly high if you're the Raptors heading into Game 3 saying, all right, yeah, we lost home court now. Golden State got the split that they needed to get, et cetera, et cetera. But if we went into the series saying, what if we lost Game 1 but won Game 2, they still got their split, but we're going to Oakland with a little momentum, and we're feeling pretty good about the fact that we're tied 1-1 with the back-to-back champs heading to their joint. I'd say you'd probably take that and feel pretty good, especially considering you fought back and you were there in the end. You were that close. You were about a half a second, a couple of inches away from a Kawhi Leonard steal of maybe busting out in transition and tying that game on a dunk or a layup. You were that close to perhaps Andre Iguodala missing that shot. You grabbed the rebound, call the timeout. You got a chance to draw up a play for a tie or a win. That, to me, was even another angle we haven't touched on. The fact that Iguodala took that three, I was shocked that he didn't try and dribble in towards the rim or even dribble into some traffic to force the Raptors to take the foul. I know he had all day to set his feet and tee that thing up after Curry was able to give it to Livingston and Livingston to Iguodala. But to go for that three at that point, and I know he's the finals MVP, I was shocked he took that shot, because if he misses, and as I say, Raptors grab the rebound, suddenly you've handed the other team a chance to tie or win the game in Game 2 of the finals, and perhaps you blow Game 2. So that took a lot of stones to not just take it, but obviously to ultimately make it and ice the game.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of commentary after the game and a lot of questions about how the Raptors defended that, but my goodness, I'm kind of with you based on the way that play was developing. And I know, you know, it wasn't Steph's greatest game shooting, but I think I kind of, if I have to pick my poison, again, horrible cliche, that's probably what I'm going to do. I'm probably going to let Andre Iguodala have that shot. I mean, you know, maybe not. I might like to have somebody a little closer to him, but it seems to me to be sort of the logical assumption if you're the Raptors.
Well, and I don't think Toronto was looking, obviously, to give up a wide-open look to Andre Iguodala, but I think the initial plan was you try to go for the steal on the inbound, you put pressure on the ball, which they did, but don't foul. If there's one guy on the floor you don't want to foul, Steph Curry. Don't foul Steph Curry. So they pressured him. They pressured him. They stayed attached to him. And they probably did ultimately foul him. Van Vliet with a little bit of a bump that could have been called. But to his credit, as he's kind of falling and slipping, you know, Curry's able to gather himself, fire the ball over to Livingston. And as I say, Kawhi Leonard, did he gamble or did he simply say, I've got a beat on this ball, I'm going to get it? And he was a half a second, a millisecond too late and a couple inches too late. The pass cleanly comes to Livingston before, you know, Kawhi can recover to foul after just missing the steal. Livingston's already given it up. To Iguodala, the Raptors' defense has scrambled because of the pressure that they were putting on Curry and because Kawhi misses the steal, and all of a sudden, a broken-down defense gives up a wide-open look to Iguodala. I don't think the plan was ultimately, let's just take our chance with a wide-open three. That's just where the ball happened to land for Golden State. And Toronto, I think, you know, there were really no other options other than, you know, okay, we're going to try and scramble out at the last second, put a token hand up in the face. But essentially was, we're going to live or die with this shot right now because, you know, we're broken down defensively. And I think that was kind of Nurse's point. Listen, at the end of the day, it wasn't disrespect to Iguodala. We weren't trying to intentionally leave a finals MVP open. We're just simply saying we'll let somebody else other than Steph Curry beat us if we ultimately can't steal the ball and ultimately get the foul. And I still think they were trying to take the foul. I saw Nurse's body language and expression heading into that timeout. And I think the frustration wasn't just because his team didn't get the ball. I think they wanted to take the foul. You don't want to obviously give up a three late in that game and essentially dig your own grave.
Yeah, I mean, and there you go. When you want a foul, if you're the Raptors, you can't get one. funny how that works out. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590-590 is the text line. And we're asking the question this morning, a split of the first two games at home, is that good enough for the Raptors? Is that good enough in your mind? So as we look at the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry had some sort of illness. He finished the game. Klay Thompson left with a hamstring injury. He was not made available to the media after the game, but I was in their locker room, and he didn't have any ice on. I mean, he seemed to be moving around okay. We know that Andre Iguodala had an MRI after game one. Of course, Kevin Durant is hurt, and Kevon Looney has, depending on who you talk to, a severely bruised chest, a sore shoulder, or possibly even some sort of shoulder sprain. Again, depending on who you talk to. All that taken into account, how significant was the return and the renaissance of Boogie Cousins in that game, Eric? And what does that mean? What does that mean going forward in this series?
Well, I think it means that clearly you have to get more from Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka on the defensive end of the floor. They need to be able to keep up with Cousins, and I thought it was maybe prophetic the way that Steve Kerr was talking quite a bit about his bigs in Bogut and Cousins after seeing what Gasol and Ibaka, and obviously more so Gasol, did to Golden State in Game 1. The last couple of days leading up to Game 2, Kerr mentioned a number of times how he felt that there were a lot of similarities between the two teams, but specifically at the center position was sort of the old school throwbacks, the big men that, you know, can play in the post, but now they've got the ability to stretch it out, Gasol and Cousins especially, both with soft hands, good passers, the good passing skills of a guy like Bogut as well, and they certainly, both of them, became major factors in the fourth quarter of that game. And as you note, if Durant's still out, if Thompson's hobbled, if Iguodala, who also got banged up again during last night's game and then was down in a heap on the floor face down, if they're not at 100%, or dare I say, if one of the two of them maybe doesn't even play, then I think Steve Kerr needs to lean on Cousins that much more, and maybe even Bogut, because he hasn't gotten a great lift in these two games from his bench, other than a little bit of a surge in the fourth quarter, a couple of big three balls from Quinn Cook. The Raptors' second unit and reserves have been better thus far in the series, and I think, generally speaking, Toronto has, at least on paper, a better bench than what Golden State has. So when Kerr does go to a couple of those guys, specifically a Cousins, whether he's starting or coming off the bench, or a Bogut, they have to be able to provide something to Golden State because, you know, as I say, Toronto has played well. Even in the loss last night, they played well in this series, and I think they've shown the chance that this is not going to be a cakewalk. This is likely to be a long series, and you're going to have to be getting production from everybody if you think you're going to knock off the Raptors.
No, and you know, you look at the final stats. I mean, as we'll say that Golden State's bench gave them significant minutes, but, I mean, they're still all in the negative with the exception of Looney, who was hurt. The Raptors used three off the bench. They were all in the positive. I mean, just details, I get that, but I don't think, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think you can necessarily say that on balance the Raptors' bench was chewed up, but, you know, Golden State, they got some key buckets at the right time from their bench. I mean, Quinn Cook, you know, and you want to talk about dialing up what the doctor ordered. But I also, what I found interesting after the game, Eric, is the way that Steve Kerr, and this gets to your point about the big men, Steve Kerr kind of went out of his way to take note of those, I guess those, there were two lobs to Andrew Bogut, two or three lobs to Bogut. And, you know, he essentially said that's kind of interesting. You know, you almost got the sense that he'd filed that away and that we may see more of those bigs out there.
Well, it was great recognition on his team's part as well to see on those mismatches when Golden State would go into pick and roll or when they would, you know, the Raptors would switch off on the screens and you'd have, you know, Fred VanVleet stuck down low, you know, at least on one of those lobs. I know it was Freddie. I believe it might have been him on both, and that's not to blame him. That's just a product of the way the defense unfolded and the fact that Bogut did a great job of presenting himself down low and making himself big and taking advantage of the mismatch. And it's all fine and good to have that mismatch and to be down there, but your teammates still have to recognize it and get you the ball. And that's where I think, again, the unselfishness of the Warriors, the basketball IQ and intelligence of the Warriors to continue to move that ball, to find the open hit. I mean, look down at the number that maybe speaks exactly to what we're both talking about the recognition, the awareness of the Warriors and finding those plays. I know Sportsnet Stats tweeted out last night something like 88 or 89% of the Warriors' field goals were assisted on last mm-hmm. night, the second highest total in NBA history. That speaks to a team moving the ball, playing unselfishly, and finding the right guy at the right moment. And, you know, as you say, and I mentioned his name, Quinn Cook was scoreless going into the fourth quarter last night. Didn't necessarily have a great game one either. But timely buckets with Steph Curry, I believe, only scoring 7 points in the second half last night.
Yep.
Golden State still shoots 60-plus percent and wins the game because other guys, like Toronto got in game one, other guys rose to the occasion.
Eric, they had 34 assists and 38 made shots.
Crazy.
You don't see that. You just don't see that.
Nope. It was, and I'll tell you, even in the moment watching the game, I didn't even notice it. And then maybe that just speaks to how we've been sort of just teased and tantalized by Golden State over the years and spoiled by what they do offensively that even, and I'm admitting, calling the game, didn't mm-hmm. even notice the stat right under my nose in front of me until the end of the night when you look down and go, damn, yeah, that was pretty good. That was a clinic. And yet the Raptors were still down two with 10, 12 seconds left and had a chance to maybe win it or go to overtime. So as I keep saying, you got to still have your head high if you're Toronto going to, you know, heading to Oakland.
Good stuff, Eric. Safe travels to Oakland. We'll be talking to you.
Well, perfect timing. I'm rolling up to the terminal right now. So
there
I will
go.
Speak to you from California.
All righty. Take care. That is Eric Smith, our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. And again, game three of that series goes Wednesday on Sportsnet Ontario. Tim and Sid will get you going at 6 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario. Basketball Central at 8:30 p.m. Tip-off is just after 9. And our post-game show, The Wrap, presented by Comda.com with Russick and Marchese right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590. The Fan wraps. And Warriors tied up at one game apiece. And as I said, going into the series, look, the Raptors as as Jared and Bowmanville says, what, they've been great for 7.5 quarters. Yeah, that's about right through two games. But I really do believe that for the Raptors to win the series, I thought they needed to win the first two games at home. That certainly doesn't mean that it's out of the question to win. I'm just saying I thought they needed to win the first two games at home. And this is mission accomplished for Golden State. And the big thing by getting a split here is Golden State bought themselves some time with Kevin Durant. And, if Kevin Durant's healthy, he's going to play. But it's a hell of a lot easier to make that decision when you're tied one game apiece or leading 2-1 than it is if you're down 0-2 in a series. It's just a lot easier to make that decision. I mean, now the decision is based purely on Kevin Durant's health, right? That's what it's based on. There's no outside factors at this point. Where you are in the series doesn't matter. Yeah, you are hurt. That might be a factor, the fact you've got other guys who are injured. But by and large, right now, it's can Kevin Durant get ready after just one practice? Steve Kerr says he can. Well, we'll see if Steve Kerr's true to his word or not. That is the biggest takeaway from this two games for me. The fact that the Golden State Warriors bought themselves some time with Kevin Durant. 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590. 590-590 is the text line. Please, call us as well on the cell phone, *590. We'll go to the phone lines. We'll take your calls. We'll let you have your say. The Raptors and Warriors tied one game apiece going west. Is that good enough? It's a Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to a Tim, and we'll give you a Sid absolutely free. Tim and Sid podcast available at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, I was feeling really good because we stopped their scoring, right? And finally got something figured out there to slow them down. And we were getting a bunch of wide open shots. I think we missed three wide open threes in a row there to cut it to maybe four. Bunch of stops in a row, and we didn't get much to show for it at the other end.
Yeah, Nick Nurse is dead on about that. The fourth quarter yesterday, down by eight. Fred VanVleet misses a shot. Pascal Siakam misses a shot. Kawhi Leonard misses a three-point shot. And they got rebounds. I mean, they had second chances. That's the thing. It's funny. The final 4 minutes basically came down to Kawhi Leonard grabbing rebounds, DeMarcus Cousins grabbing rebounds, and the Raptors missing shots. I mean, if you want to get down to it, that's really what it came down to. And then, of course, Andre Iguodala with that 27-foot three-pointer from Sean Livingston. Sean Livingston, by the way, just coming in as a sub for Quentin Cook at that point in time. I thought Steve Kerr coached a hell of a game. I thought Nick Nurse did as well. I mean, Nick Nurse is – I was just talking to my producer, Travis McKenzie, about this. Man, Nick Nurse has won me over. I think both coaches are getting absolutely what they can out of their available players. And, you know, and I wanted to backtrack a little bit because I didn't want to make it seem like I was hammering on Kyle Lowry at all necessarily. But it's just that, you know, you got – and Kyle Lowry does so much with this team. And Nick Nurse is right. This team is – the way this team is built now, you don't need Kyle Lowry to be your leading scorer every night. But I need Kyle to be a little smarter when he's playing with four fouls than he was last night. Certainly the final foul was just silly. You know, he wasn't going to get the ball, and it almost seemed a little petulant. So that, you know, I don't know if having Kyle Lowry on the court is going to make Pascal Siakam's three-pointer fall. I don't know about that, but it would certainly give Nick Nurse another option. You know, and again, you know, Steph Curry did not have a good game, but man, he was out there at the end slugging, right? Dex in Hamilton, what's up, Dex?
Jeff, how you doing, buddy? Welcome back to the morning slots.
Good to be back. Thank you.
Great. You know, I'm kind of going back and forth here. My inclination is to say that, you know what, now it's series over. They had to win both, you know, out of the chute in Toronto. But you know what, it's just, you know, they play defense so well at times. And, it's, as you talked about, Durant coming back, when he comes back, would have a big impact on the series. And you know what? You know, Kawhi Leonard, still the best player in the series.
Yep.
And you know, series ain't over until when you have defense and Kawhi Leonard going for you. So I'm kind of torn. I think it might be over, but you never know.
Well, let's face it, and thanks for the call, Dex. Let's face it. They've had half a quarter. They've had a bad half of a quarter. Or a bad three quarters of a quarter, however you want to describe it, in two games. They really did. I mean, you get rolled 18-0 to start the third quarter. Hey, chances are you're not going to win that game. And yet, and I keep getting back to this, you look at the chances the Raptors had late in the game. I mean, one of those threes falls. You get a chance to set your defense. It was really close. But what we learned, again, is that the Golden State Warriors really are more than a two- or three-person team. You look at the contributions they got, 21 minutes from Quinn Cook, 7 minutes from Andrew Bogut, 7 minutes and 6 points. Draymond Green, 9 assists, 10 boards. DeMarcus Cousins, 27 minutes, 11 points, 10 boards, 6 assists. Like it's... And of course, Andre Iguodala with the dagger at the end. It's just a reminder of what a champion looks like, and I think Michael Grange pointed that out in Sportsnet.ca. You know, Toronto basketball fans, you've seen Golden State in the finals up close, two games. That's what a champion looks like, man. That is what a champion looks like. And I love, you know, Andre Iguodala made a great point after the game. He said, look, everybody sees our team. They see the offense. You know, they see us overpowering teams. And he said, people don't see the hard work that goes into that. They really don't. They see the end product, but they don't see the hard work. And they don't see that to go on a long postseason run, you're going to have guys that are hurt. I mean, it may not show up, you know, on the game report. You may not hear about it from the coach. But when you go on a long run, when you go to the finals 4 or 5 years in a row, that's a lot of basketball. That's a lot of pounding. It's a lot of accumulated soreness. So Iguodala's point was, look, you know, we're used to winning with guys who are hurt. It's the hard work you don't see that goes into it. And I think if anything, through two games, I've developed an even greater appreciation for this team than I had before. Chris in Stony Creek, what's up, Chris? A split. Are you happy with that? Is that good enough?
You know what, buddy? You know, I'll be honest with you. One of the things that gives me optimism still in this series is defensively, the Raptors still have them, I think. I think yesterday, if Golden State would have came out and they would have unlocked them defensively from the half court, like we've been seeing, and be able to shut down Philly, the Bucks the same way, then I would have been really skeptical moving forward in this series. But really, at the end of the day, the Raptors just went cold for the end of the second quarter and for half of the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that makes it really optimistic is, you know, we've all changed our perspective of the series by watching Game 1. But if you would have rewinded this back to the beginning of the series before they even tipped it in Game 1, and I would have told you that it would have been this close heading back to Oracle Arena, I think you would have taken that and you would have been optimistic. I think our perspective has just changed because of the dominance that we had in Game 1.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Thanks for the call. I think it's a fair point, you know, I also think that, again, to have a chance at winning the series, I think you had to win. I'm not going to say to have a chance at winning the series. They've got a chance at winning the series. To win the series, I think you had to win both games at home. You have to win as many games as you can without Kevin Durant. Maybe I'm putting too much in Kevin Durant. Maybe Kevin Durant's going to come back and suck. I doubt it. But as I said, if nothing else, last night's win maybe delayed that decision by a bit and bought him extra time. Clifton in Etobicoke. What's up, Clifton?
Yeah, good morning, Jeff.
Listen, good morning.
I'm also won over by Nick Nurse, man.
Yeah, I have to admit it. I have to get, I mean, look, you and I are both Dwayne Casey guys, but, you know, it's pretty hard not to give it up to Nick Nurse.
But his game-to-game adjustments, you know, has me, you know, like thinking, like, this guy is a good coach. Now, listen, I'm not, obviously, it would have been nice to win both games, Jeff, but, like, I might be in a minority, but I wasn't really blown away by Golden State's performance last night, because I honestly thought that, you know, a few of those cheap fouls, I mean, yeah, they're legal fouls, but, you know, when they step back into our players and get those calls, if we can clean up a couple of those things, because they had to have gotten, you know, at least 8 points from those plays. Mm-hmm. And if we can clean up, you know, a couple of those and, you know, obviously, you know, hit some of those open shots, I think we're right there with these guys. I really do. Like, I was thinking, you know, along the same line as yours, if we don't win the first two games at home, we have no chance. But having watched them last night, buddy, like, I'm starting to think that we could very well go there, play a game like we played last night, and beat them at the end.
Yeah, and you know what? And it is going to come down to, I think, Clifton as well. And health is always an issue for everybody. I'm not using this as an excuse for Golden State, but it's going to come down to their health, too. You know, if you're not going to get games like that out of Quinn Cook and Andrew Bogut. I don't necessarily think you're going to get games like that out of those two guys over again.
You know, I tell you, like, I was impressed with the way, you know, Van Vliet stayed with Steph, like, you mm-hmm. know, yesterday. I think, I don't know if it was listed yesterday, like, you know, a couple more days in, like him helping out with Klay Thompson, you know, hobbling. I think, you know, like we could be right there, man. I really do.
Yep. Appreciate the call. And you're right. And let's keep this in mind. They've had a bad three quarters of a quarter for the most part. And let's see, you know, we're talking a lot about the Marcus Cousins now, but let's see what adjustments Nick Nurse can make to his presence in the lineup. I found it interesting that, you know, early in the game, it was pretty obvious that that they had, I mean, and I was kind of surprised. I mean, they appeared to have DeMarcus Cousins on Marc Gasol way, way outside the three-point line. And, you know, it just seemed to me it was tailor-made for quick fouls, and we saw that with DeMarcus Cousins. And again, DeMarcus Cousins is a great asset for this team, but I'm wondering if maybe the Raptors don't think they can go at him a little bit and force him into early foul trouble again. Dan Feldman is NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk NBA writer. Leo Routens, of course, is our Raptors TV analyst. Both gentlemen will join us. We'll continue our hoops talk when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good show, good podcast. Subscribe to podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. He never takes it one game at a time. He never gives 110% or plays a full 60 minutes because he's not a sports cliche writing hack. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It is what it is. You have to adjust the way the game is being, you know, played and officiated. So, you know, once you're in foul trouble or whatever the case may be, you have to adapt.
More common wisdom from Marc Gasol after last night's 109-104 Game 2 loss for the Raptors against the Golden State Warriors. The series is tied up one game apiece. Heading back to the West Coast, heading back to Oakland. Game 3 will be Wednesday, and we will have it on Sportsnet Ontario. Tip-off will be just after 9 p.m. Basketball Central at 8:30 p.m. And the wrap with Russick and Marchese right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Much of the discussion, but a lot of the discussion in the city this morning, of course, about the officiating in last night's game. And you know, again, I've been critical of NBA officiating in the past. That was not the best officiated game I've seen, but it sure as hell wasn't the worst officiated game I've seen either. And you know, I know people in this city, but there's some NBA officials that get people's goat. People in this city get upset when they see Tony Brothers is working a game. The Raptors' record with Tony Brothers is actually not that bad. And again, I thought last night, you know, we could sit here and pick apart probably 30% of the foul calls last night. But bottom line is, when it comes to Kyle Lowry, and I think that's, in terms of fouls, that's sort of the most important Raptor we're talking about. There was really only one foul where I had an issue with. I mean, the rest of them I thought were pretty clear, and certainly the one he fouled out on. I have no idea what he was doing trying to reach in for the ball. Anyhow, as several people pointed out on our text line, and 590-590 is the text number, the Raptors have had seven really good or good quarters out of eight. One really bad quarter. That was the third quarter yesterday, of course, when the Golden State Warriors rolled them 18-0. An 18-point run that really put Golden State in front and gave them the momentum to finish the game. Dan Feldman is NBA writer with NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk. Dan Feldman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Dan, thanks so much for joining us this morning in between games 2 and 3, or the morning after game 2 to be more exact. There was a lot of social media outcry about the officiating last night from former players and from current players as well.
As I said in my little preamble, I'm certainly, I've been critical of NBA officiating, but I didn't necessarily think last night's game was egregious the way some people seem to think it was.
No, I didn't either. It was a tightly called game. There were a lot of fouls, but it went both ways. I thought they were pretty consistent with it and fair. I think fair is the most important thing. I don't necessarily love a game called that way where it's so tight, but that's what it was, and it was fine. And it's on the players to adapt because it was very clear early what style of game the refs were going to call.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, you know, Boogie Cousins certainly got the certainly got the message early, got some early fouls, finished the game with 11 points and 5 fouls. So, I think I'm one of those people who's just kind of operating under the assumption that if Golden State won game 2, that might buy them a little bit of extra time insofar as Kevin Durant is concerned. But I wanted to ask you this. The ability of DeMarcus Cousins not only to leave his imprint in the game, but to play 27 and a half minutes, has that changed things for Steve Kerr, you think, going forward?
Maybe a little. When Durant comes back, I think there's much less use for Cousins. The Warriors' offense, especially against a really good Raptors defense, has faltered at times. Cousins is so talented that he can help. He can make the good pass. He can get a basket for himself against a really good defense. When you're in a muck, the Warriors don't want to play that way. They want to play with better movement and player movement, and Cousins is a little slow for that. It's not really his style. As much as everybody talks about the stylistic differences with Durant, he fits that so much better. So I think once Durant comes back, then there's far less need for Cousins. There still will be at moments. You're not going to play Durant and Curry 48 minutes. Mm-hmm. But until Durant comes back, I think the fact that Cousins can handle such a big workload will be important. Maybe that is still game 3. Maybe it's even still game 4. You know, we still don't know exactly when Durant's going to come back, but I think that'll change Cousins' role a lot.
What explains these third quarters that Golden State has? I mean, this is, you know, Steph Curry talked about, you know, depth and next man up being part of their DNA and all that. But my God, so are these third quarter runs. Like, this is it's a trademark of the Golden State Warriors as much as anything.
Yeah, you know, I think last night was a little different than the typical. I think a lot of times that's when they go to their really good lineups, Draymond Green at center. They're not using that now because they don't have Durant. Part of what makes Draymond Green at center work so well is having all those wings. Last night was a little different. They changed their defensive matchups. You know, they put Andre Iguodala on Pascal Siakam, Klay Thompson on Kawhi Leonard. They had Draymond guarding Kyle Lowry. And it was just very unconventional, very different. And the Raptors didn't know what to make of it. And they were just so befuddled. They had some turnovers. And then all of a sudden, the Warriors are getting out in transition. They're passing well. And everything changes on a dime like that. It was a great adjustment.
Putting Draymond on Kyle Lowry was unexpected. And, I thought that it was interesting hearing Steve Kerr after the game talk about, and I don't know if he was necessarily planting a seed here or anything, but you almost got the impression that he thought that he may have stumbled on something with his big men in terms of, you know, Cousins being able to play Bogut. He talked about how interested he was that those lob passes to Bogut worked. And I'm just wondering if maybe this, you know, a lot of times game one, it seems to me, it's almost like show and tell in a series, right? Game one, everybody's trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work. You're trying to get the opponent in videotape. You're trying to get as many different looks at their look as you possibly can. You think maybe that Steve Kerr kind of stumbled onto something here that, you know, maybe because of Kevon, his injury and, you know, and Clay's sort of unavailability in the fourth quarter, that maybe Steve Kerr just sort of stumbled on a combination here that might work?
Maybe. I mean, the most important thing is that it worked for a night. And you don't have to necessarily go back to, you to say, hey, we got this game because of it. I was particularly interested by Draymond moving on to Kyle Lowry, and then he guarded Van Vliet also.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an impressive move play by Draymond to be able to handle that, but I thought it worked well because he's so good in help defense. You want him moving around, rotating around, and it worked because Siakam challenges Draymond at the rim so much that if you don't have to worry about that, yes, you don't want to give up open threes to Lowry and to Van Vliet, but you know where they're going to be on the court. They're not moving all around, cutting, getting to the rim. And so it really helped out Draymond's defense, and I thought it was a really impressive change.
How do you think Steve Kerr approaches the use of Durant now? Is it simply when he's ready, or do you think that maybe he does think that he's bought himself a little bit of time by pulling out that win in game two? You know, I think if you're down 0-2, you certainly have an extra. There's something extra to think about when it comes to getting Kevin Durant back in the lineup.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think, you know, injuries are a little different, maybe, but we've seen so consistently from Steve Kerr that he likes to hold things to use later. They are so good when they go to that death lineup with Draymond at center when everybody's healthy. Mm-hmm. They don't use it all the time. They don't really use it until they're pressed. And so I think there might be some similar thinking here of, okay, once we really have our backs against the wall, that's when we'll go to Durant, and they don't anymore.
Dan, we're going to let you scoot. Appreciate you doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Dan Feldman is NBA writer with NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk. And, again, the Raps 109-104 winners or losers, 109-104. The Golden State Warriors. That series is tied up one game apiece, going back to Oakland for game three on Wednesday. And we mentioned that much of the discussion these next 2 days will be about Kevin Durant and his status. And you know, I think Steve Kerr said yesterday in his mind that it would probably take one good practice for Kevin Durant to be able to contribute. And that's the thing, you know, you've got to keep in mind that getting Kevin Durant back and expecting him to play 40 minutes, probably not in the cards right now. But if you're Steve Kerr and you get him back, you know, could you get 28 minutes out of him at least? Could you get basically the minutes Iguodala gave you? Maybe what, you know, the minutes Cousins gave you? I mean, to me, that's the whole thing. It's the idea that Kevin Durant has to come back and play 40 minutes, I don't think is necessarily on. Just being healthy enough to move around and contribute, I think is significant enough. Leo Routens is our Raptors TV analyst on Sportsnet. Leo Routens joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Leo, thanks for doing this. I know you guys are getting ready to take off. I really appreciate it. You know, it was interesting hearing Nick Nurse talk about that fourth quarter last night and the missed opportunities they had and how, you know, they finally, like he said, we finally figured something out about Golden State, and then the shots just wouldn't fall for us. Will Nick look at this, you know, split where, let's face it, Leo, they were as good, if not better, than Golden State in seven of those eight quarters? Will he be happy with this split?
Well, I don't know if coaches are ever happy when you have a chance to win, but I would think that you have to look at it in a very positive way. Hey, you're playing a team like Golden State. You're talking about a team that's in the finals five times, right? So to have some of the lapses or droughts that the Raptors had and to be able to have a chance to win the game, that tells you you're also doing a lot of things well. So it's just a matter of cleaning up some of the stuff. Obviously, you got to make shots, right? You got to find a way to – and when you're missing – you just don't want to get in a situation where, you know, say you start to struggle and you start firing up threes, because Golden State, everything gets amplified, right? Turnovers get amplified, missed shots get amplified. You really got to be smart with every possession. And if the Raptors do that, and especially when you go on the road, but they know they can win. And I think they have enough to take out of the first two games to feel confident enough to know that they can win. And what they have to do to accomplish that in the road.
Leo, put your coach's hat on. What does it say to you when a team routinely comes out and has great third quarters? I mean, they come out of the locker room at half and they have great dominant third quarters. What does that tell you about a team? What does that tell you about a coaching staff?
You know what it tells me? If I'm a coach, I'd be pretty happy with the guys I got on the floor. That's what it would tell me. I mean, you got to remember, this is a veteran team, right? These are guys that, I was just talking about it on the way to the airport this morning. Everybody's kind of dragging, right? I mean, this has been an extended run. Imagine doing this 5 times in a row. Mm-hmm. I mean, plus when you're the champions, you're taking everybody's best shot every single game all season long. And now you're going, you're going to this extended run, once again. You got players that understand how to win. And they understand that you come out of that locker room at halftime, and there's not a coach in the world that doesn't tell you the first 5 minutes of the third quarter are critical. And these guys get it. They understand it. And that's one of the reasons they've won championships. And so if you're the Raptors, you got to go back to what did you do in game one? You know, you could, for the most part, you controlled the tempo, you controlled the pace of that game for 4 quarters. And when you're playing against a team that's like Golden State, you have to be mentally in it every single possession. So I think Steve Kerr would tell anybody he's blessed to have some incredible players in a team that have been through the ropes and they get it. And they know that's what you have to do if you want to win.
Hey, Leo, I'm wondering, you talked about pace, and when you've got a game where, Steph's obviously, whatever he had, illness or whatever, starts the game really slowly. I mean, you could tell on TV there were some close-ups of him, and, he was breathing deeply going off. Then you have Klay Thompson misses a large chunk of the game with the hamstring injury. In some ways, does that make it a little difficult for the Raptors in that you really don't get a consistent pace? You go from the track meet pace with those guys in there to slower, and then now you got kind of a combination of the two. And does that almost make it harder in some ways as opposed to sort of getting in that rhythm, getting in that flow, and just going?
Well, if I would agree to that it does make it harder, then I would be saying that Golden State is dictating how the game is going to be played.
Mm.
And so if that's the case, then you've got a problem already.
Right.
So whether it's Klay, whether it's Steph, whether they're both on the floor, whether they're hot, whether they're not, you have to dictate how the game is going to be played. And again, a lot of your offense dictates what will happen. If you think back, okay, first quarter, I thought it was a horrendously officiated first quarter, okay? But the Raptors survived that. And they also had a chance to go in a halftime with a double-digit lead. They let it slip away at the end. But if you look at the pace of the first half, and remember, first quarter, Klay was on fire. Second quarter, Steph was on fire. Well, how did you control that pace? Even with all that happening, you were locked in, right? And once you kind of let that slip away, and that's even with the distraction of the officials, which to me was really impressive. So you got to – what's happening on their side really shouldn't impact how you want to approach it because you know that they still have the type of players, whether it's 1, 2, 3, or 4 of them, that as a team – they know how they want to play, and they've been doing it a long time, and they're very good at it. You just can't let them play their way.
You mentioned that first quarter. There are 14 personal fouls in that first quarter. I mean, that also, as you say, that contributes as well, doesn't it, to a lack of flow or whatever. I mean, it's just –
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, I don't want to turn it into hammering officials because I know I do that too much in the NBA, but sometimes you got to let the guys play, you know?
You know, I hate getting on or talking about the officials. It's not my thing. But I thought it was really bad. And what impressed me was the Raptors were tougher than that, right? Mm-hmm. They not only survived it, but they actually thrived in that environment. And they just got tougher themselves. And like I said, they should have had a double-digit lead at halftime. So when you can do that, and my thing is always this, that as bad as it was, it balances out. And the Raptors roughed it out, And well, it did balance out. They you know, the free throw line was, I think the Raptors had a slight edge at the end of the game at the free throw line. So it does balance out during the course of the game. But, in all sincerity, though, there were some things called and some situations that occurred out there. I was just shaking my head. And I got to give credit to the Raptors for not getting distracted by that. That's kind of been a characteristic of Nick Nurse and his squad, that no matter how bad it gets sometimes, and it's going to happen with officials, you just can't let it get in your head. And they did a great job of handling that.
Leo, I get the impression that this is going to be the kind of series where everybody's going to see everybody on them at some point, regardless of what your position is. But some of Steve Kerr's, you know, the second half adjustments and putting Draymond on Kyle and things of that nature. What did you make of the coaching, the adjustments both coaches made in this game as it went on?
Well, you know, I think Steve Kerr made the point at the beginning of the series that there's a lot of similarities between these two teams, especially defensively. You can switch a lot of players, and you have players that guard in multiple positions. So I actually liked some of the changes he made in the third quarter, especially. All of a sudden, you got Klay Thompson on Kawhi Leonard. Draymond, you mentioned Draymond Green. Then you had Andre Iguodala go to Pascal Siakam. And those are some interesting changes. And I thought the Raptors, for example, Kawhi Leonard didn't take advantage of the matchup with Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. Now, he's a great defender, but Kawhi is physically strong enough that he could have taken advantage of him and been a little bit more authoritative going to the basket or getting into paint and scoring. And if Golden State at that point wants to do everything they can to help Klay, then to get rid of the ball and find your teammates. But the big adjustment, if you look at game one, I thought Golden State was over-helping. All right, they're doubling all over the place. They're sending guys left and right, and the Raptors did a great job of moving the ball. And they actually, Golden State actually hurt themselves for, in my opinion, needless doubles and rotations. Whereas they didn't do that. They were very selective. They stuck to, you know, single coverage in a lot of situations. When they did send a second man, it was aggressive. You look at the way they played at the end of the game. They went at Kawhi hard. Mm-hmm. They just wanted him to get rid of the basketball. It was very decisive of what they wanted to do. So those are the adjustments they made. And now the Raptors are going to have to, you know, come back and make their adjustments. So it makes it fun. I mean, I think you've got two really good coaches, two really good teams, and two really good defensive teams. So you're going to see a lot of different things happening out there.
Ilio, what the ability of Boogie Cousins to, you know, leave his imprint in the game and play 28 minutes or however many minutes he played, 27, 38, how does that change things going forward, or does it? Because, you know, at some point, I think we're going to operate under the assumption we're going to see Kevin Durant at some point in this series, and I don't know how, you know, Durant and Boogie, how that's all going to work out together. You know, a lot will depend on the health of other players, obviously, but how do you see him impacting this series?
Well, I've already seen it impact in a way I don't like. Look, this is a guy that's been out for an extended period of time. If you want him, if I'm coaching against him, I want him to shoot the ball, okay? Mm-hmm. Because two things happen. One, the hardest thing to get back when you come back from extended time off is your rhythm for your shot. Two, I know that every time Cousins shoot the ball, Klay Thompson's not shooting the ball, Steph Curry's not shooting the ball, Draymond Green's not shooting the ball, Andre Iguodala's not shooting the ball, Cook's not shooting the ball. I just know it's better for me if he's shooting.
Right.
And he was 3-for-8 in the game last night. Yeah, I think he was 0-for-2 or 3, whatever, in game one. But he's got assists, and he's moving the ball, and he's getting the free throw line. That's what I don't want to see. I want to force him out of the paint as much as I can. He doesn't really hurt you with a lot of post-ups, but I want to push him out. And then when he gets the ball, I'm not going to let him drive. I'm not going to let him create something for somebody else. I want him shooting the ball. So I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to gap. I'm going to get a hand up, and I'm going to say, shoot all you want. I don't care. I'm not going to run at him when he's out there. I'm not going to do anything to discourage him from shooting the basketball. I'd like him to be a volume shooter. And I think the Raptors are not doing that, and the way they are playing him is helping him right now, and it's hurting the Raptors.
Leo, we're going to let you run. Have a safe flight, my friend. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Have a good one.
Leo Rotens is our Raptors TV analyst in Sportsnet. And he and Matt will have the call of Game 3 Wednesday from Golden State, from Oakland. At 9 o'clock will be the tip-off on Sportsnet Ontario. Raps Golden State tied one game apiece. We'll be joined in the 11 o'clock hour by Arash Madani, who's covering the NBA Finals for us. And I should mention, by the way, because I was doing primetime sports last week, and I suddenly realized that I neglected to tweet this out. If you're a Baseball Central fan, don't worry. We will have Baseball Central once the NBA Finals are over. It'll resume. Regular service will be resumed. And, you know, of course, that there's a certain date where we make our switch from 11 to noon to noon to 1, and that will happen. So don't worry. Barker's fine. He's still alive. Travis McKenzie talked to him. Maybe we'll get Barker. We should get Barker on today to talk Jays a bit. I'll get him later in the week. Okay. We'll get Barker on later in the week to talk Jays. God love the Jays. They've lost 6 in a row, 10 of 11, following a weekend sweep in Denver. And they'll be home to face the Yankees and Arizona Diamondbacks, which is two teams you really don't want to be facing right now. The Diamondbacks are a fairly impressive offensive team. The Yankees are just sick. I've got a column going up on Sportsnet.ca in a few minutes on the Yankees. The Yankees are obscene. What they're doing this year with their injuries. Rick Porcello, the Red Sox, basically gave the Yankees the pennant this weekend. Or at least said that, we haven't closed the gap in the Yankees. Yeah, it's a little early. It's June 3rd, but the Yankees look awfully good. And guess what? They're getting healthy. Aaron Judge, Dellin Betances, Didi Gregorius, he's going to be back on Friday. So the Yankees are going to get better. Anyhow, we'll talk about that later on. The Stanley Cup Final continues tonight on Sportsnet. Game 4 of the series, Boston leading 2-1, a 7-3 win over the St. Louis Blues. The Boston Bruins special teams are outrageous. I mean, we've talked a lot about the Bruins' power play. Colton Parayko's goal in Game 3 ended a streak of 21 consecutive penalty kills by the Bruins. How the hell does that happen? The Bruins special teams have indeed been special. I know it's a horrible cliche, but there's no other way to put it. This is one of the most impressive postseason coaching jobs, postseason special teams performances we have ever seen. And game 4 of that series goes tonight on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Hockey Central's pregame is at 7:30. Puck drop is just after 8. The Bruins can take a 3-1 stranglehold in this series after chasing Jordan Binnington in game 3. Andrew Raycroft is Bruins and NHL analyst on Nesson. He is, of course, former NHL goaltender, and Andrew Raycroft will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. On demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Listen all day for the keywords. Text us for your chance at lower bowl tickets to game 5 of the NBA Finals. This is your shot at seeing the Raptors in their first ever NBA Finals.
against the Golden State Warriors. Go to sportsnet.ca/590 for full details. The keyword is Lowry 7. You can text us at 590-590, but I got to tell you this. I've been looking at the text line. It's Lowry, capital L, O as in Oriole, W as in Warrior, R as in Real, Y as in why the hell can't you freaking people spell Kyle Lowry? L-O-W-R-Y 7, the numeral 7. And it's all one word. No space between it. I have never seen Kyle Lowry's name. Why do people want to put two extra syllables in a two-syllable name? Anyhow. Seriously. L-O-W-E-R-Y. L-O-E-W-E-R-Y. L-A, oh yeah, we had the Brett Laurie fan. L-A-W-R-I-E. God. L-O-W-R-Y 7. Very simple. I can't enter it in for you. Anyhow, you want to go sit in the lower bowl for game 5 of the NBA Finals. 590-590. Lowry, L-O-W-R-Y 7. The Stanley Cup Final continue tonight on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. The Boston Bruins leading the St. Louis Blues 2-1. And in my corny way, as I mentioned before the break, the Bruins are putting special in special teams. I don't know if we've seen a special team performance the way we've seen from the Bruins. You know, we talk about balance in hockey. You know, we're usually talking about a balance of offense and defense. The Boston Bruins are making us think of a balance between penalty killing and special teams. Or penalty killing in the power play. The power play is at clicking at 35.9% right now. The penalty kill is obscene. Colton Parayko scored, what, 6 minutes into the third period of Game 3? At that point, the Bruins had killed off 21 consecutive power plays. 9 of 10 in the first 3 games of this final. And this is a continuation of what we've seen in the regular season with the Bruins' defense. But, I mean, come on. At this stage of the year, with all the videotape everybody has and everybody, you would have to think somebody would find a way through this penalty kill. Andrew Raycroft is a Bruins and NHL analyst on Nesson, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So, Andrew, tell me, you know, not having seen the Bruins all year, has this power play... Like I can't imagine a power play operating at this, or a penalty kill operating at this this level of efficiency during the regular season. But was it pretty good during the regular season? And what explains the success the Bruins have had on the penalty kill?
It was pretty good through the regular season. You know, you don't get to the top 2 or 3 teams in the league without those special teams. But they've certainly brought it to another level here in the playoffs, I think. You know, and on the other side of it, since Toronto, I think, you know, they haven't faced a power play that really has a lot of talent either. You know, you look at Carolina, you look at Columbus, you know, and now St. Louis, they're a little more meat and potatoes power play kind of teams where, you know, when you have a guy like Char on the back, he's able to squash any of that cycling down low. And then with Bergeron winning faceoffs, those are the two big keys that I see. And then on top of all that, Tuukka Rask making a bunch of big saves in the last 3 weeks that, you know, that goes to the success. Bergeron winning faceoff, Chara being Chara, and then, you know, Tuukka making the big saves at when they do break down a little bit.
See, conversely, the power play has been really good as well. And you know, the thing that amazes me, and you're right, I mean, you know, the Bruins did play some teams that didn't have overwhelming power plays. But it's just, Andrew, there's got to be so much tape now
on everybody. Yes. That you would think somebody would have found sort of a soft underbelly someplace on this Bruins special teams. But it seems as if Bruce Cassidy's got sort of two or in some cases three sets of units he can actually go to at times.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the depth on both units, it makes a big difference. And that's what Cassidy can rely on. And he can make adjustments easier because of that depth. He talked about a couple of the breakouts they changed from games 2 to 3, and it really made a difference. And when you can interchange personnel, it makes it that much harder to make those adjustments as a team, watching tape. And you see them do something, okay, we did this really well in game 2, and then they throw, they take the brusque off and throw Krejci on the power play the first unit. And that changes things so much for them that they have a hard time making those in-game adjustments, and then they go 4 for 4 on the power play. So, I think Cassidy and the coaching staff do a great job with adjustments, but I think they're very lucky to have the pieces they have, the depth they have, where they can make adjustments. And like you say, on the penalty kill, they have three pairings, solid pairings of forwards they can always rely on. And if someone's not going, then the other two pick up the slack. So, a lot of it's depth, and it's made a big difference.
We looked at Torrey Krug's regular season numbers, and it would be wrong to say this guy came out of nowhere and had to have the playoff performance that he's having. But it seems as if people are recognizing him more now, and that happens. There's two teams left standing. People tend to focus on individual players on those two teams. That goes without saying. But what has changed? Has anything changed in Torrey Krug's game during the postseason? Have you noticed a difference if he's, I don't know, being a little more aggressive offensively, a little more aggressive physically? What have you seen with him?
Yeah, it's a couple things. I think all season he's been fantastic on the power play, and he does such a great job offensively finding the seams, finding Pasternak or Marchand through those seams with a fake shot. And then on top of that, he does a great job getting the pucks through. I think come playoff time, you mentioned how aggressive he's gotten physically. I think that's a big thing. You see him laying out, and obviously the big hit's the one we all see, but I think game to game, he's been more physical down low defensively than we've seen him all season here. And I think the other thing is Brandon Carlo. Brandon Carlo's had such a great playoff, and his best games were probably in the Toronto series just because he was matched up against the talent that Toronto had. But he's been so solid that it's allowed Torrey to be more roving, kind of going out and being that aggressive guy both physically and offensively because Carlo's been so stable beside him. So I look at those two things, him just deciding to be more aggressive and then having Brandon Carlo beside him playing at a high level as well.
The talk after game 3 about on the part of Craig Berube about the officiating and essentially questioning the number of opportunities that the Bruins are getting. How much of that is legit, and how much of that do you think is just Craig Berube sort of employing the time-honored tradition of sort of trying to get in the heads of the referee?
Yeah, it seems like a time-honored, decision by him to maybe squeeze a call or two out of the refs at home in game 4. Obviously they've taken a lot of penalties, so it's an easy one to go to. And when you give up four power play goals on 4 opportunities on 4 shots, you want to take the questions and the comments away from that, I think. And that the easiest way to do that is to complain about the calls. St. Louis has been very physical. They've been trying to take every lick they can. They've done it all playoffs. You hear the San Jose Sharks talked about their series as well. So, they're playing on the edge, and it's, it's amazing how many penalties do get called. Do we remember, 15 years ago when you literally had to, basically send the guy into next year to get a penalty called. And then it was just a 2-minute roughing call. So the game's changed in a big way on all of us. And they are calling these penalties like we've never seen in the finals.
One of the things that I found really interesting, Bruce, and I thought Bruce Cassidy sort of went out of his way to point this out, that sometimes gets overlooked when you have a series that looks like it may come down to special teams, or when one team is clearly superior to the other team in terms of special teams, is the role of the goaltender in that. And, I mean, you'd be perfectly positioned to talk about Tuukka Rask and the role he plays, you know, beyond the, your goaltender being your best penalty killer, which, you know, is a truism. But what else does he do that, that helps, you know, that helps the power play and the penalty kill?
Well, you know, he's an okay puck handler, but he does a good job getting it to the right guys on the power play. Obviously he can move it up quickly to Krug. Usually it's Krug going back to get it. Penalty kill wise, what he's done so well in the playoffs is slow it down. He hasn't given up rebounds. So when I say slow it down, he takes a whistle. He's been able to, you know, not extend the play. If, you know, he makes a save, a point shot save, he's corralling a rebound, allowing Bergeron to go win the faceoff, and then they get it out. Where at times, if a goalie's struggling on the, you know, on the penalty kills, you know, struggling as well, that point shot is a rebound, goes to the corner, the penalty kills out for another 35 seconds, and they get more opportunity. So Tuukka's done a fantastic job slowing the game down, slowing the power play, the opponent's power plays down by getting a lot of rebounds, corralling the rebounds, and just being right on top of the puck.
So what'll be the key, do you think, for St. Louis tonight?
They need to have a huge start. They need to get, you know, I think a two-goal lead, you know, to feel a little bit of comfort. They obviously had one in the game one, but it's a different scenario at home. They need to, they cannot get down, and they cannot allow this game to be 1-0 St. Louis for more than 40 minutes. I think, you know, they need to have a big offensive output early and get up on these Bruins, because if the Bruins are hanging around, they're going to find a way to get into overtime or get this win, and if they go up 3-1, that's all she wrote.
Andrew, we appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much, man.
Awesome, Jeff. Enjoy the Raptors.
Be well. That's Andrew Raycroft, our Bruins and NHL analyst on Nesson. In game four tonight on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Puck drop is just after 8 o'clock. The Bruins leading 2-1. And, you know, we're so focused on the Raptors in this city, in this marketplace, that it's we might be overlooking one of the most... one of the best cup runs we've seen in a long time by an NHL team. You know, and I don't want to get into the whole, you know, should Leafs fans feel good that the Bruins are playing this well? Does it, you know, remove some of the sting from having the Leafs go out in seven? Because it's, I mean, you can't play that game. You know, you don't know how you would have matched up against the other teams going forward. Just because you played the Bruins well doesn't mean that if you'd won the series, or just because you played the Bruins and took them to seven games doesn't mean if you'd won the series you'd go on and have the same type of success that the Bruins have had so far. So it just doesn't work that way. And I don't think anybody in this city, and I don't care who your opponent is, I don't think anybody in this city would expect the Leafs to have the same amount of success in special teams that the Bruins have had in the postseason, because there was nothing in the regular season that suggested that the Leafs were capable of going in this type of run. But we may be just letting one of the most dominant postseason performances by a team, you know, slip through our fingertips here, because what the Bruins are doing is really remarkable. They are just such a well-coached, cohesive unit. And it's, you know, if it was anybody other than the Bruins, I think we'd have a little easier time giving it up for them. But what they have done has been remarkable. And I've got to tell you, we talked a little bit about Nick Nurse and how impressed we've been with his performance in the postseason as head coach of the Raptors. Yeah, Bruce Cassidy still seems to me, to be underrated as a head coach. And again, you know, I understand you have a staff and power play and special teams. You know, it's not always on the head coach, but the head coach creates the environment that allows people to succeed, right? The head coach creates the environment that allows his assistant coaches to have success. And, yeah, Bruce Cassidy's done just a remarkable job with this team. They're really well coached. Arash Madani of Sportsnet is covering the NBA Finals. Arash gets a lot of TV time during those, you know, you ever notice that? During those podium sessions? So podium sessions are more for TV and radio guys for the most part, I think. But Arash gets a lot of FaceTime asking difficult questions of players. Kind of an interesting weekend beyond the NBA for Canadian basketball as well. This little story kind of slipped through the cracks. But, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about the, you know, the growth of basketball in this country and what type of an impact this final will have on basketball in this country. Very quietly this weekend, Kia Nurse, who, of course, played at Hamilton St. Thomas More Catholic School, very quietly, she was named a Jordan Brand Ambassador by the WNBA. Or in the WNBA. And that puts her in a position to be one of the most recognizable Canadian female athletes of all time, if she isn't already. It's a pretty big deal. And I think there's a lot of lessons, not just for women's sports in general, but Canadian sports, in what has happened to Kia Nurse and how she has been able to create this brand around herself. Just think about this. One of the most marketable Canadian athletes is a basketball player. One of the most marketable Canadian female athletes is a basketball player. That says something. That says something about the growth of the game in this country, not just in the men's level, but obviously as well at the women's level. So, I know Arash Madani is very intrigued in the conversation as to how our sports culture is changing and what role these playoffs may have in either exacerbating, speeding up, or maybe even altering that change. Arash Madani will join us. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Grab a ladle. It's time to stir the pot. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
And the sky was made of all the stars are just like little fish. You should learn when to go. You should learn how to.
Back to the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. 8 o'clock puck drop on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. We will have Game 3 of the Raptors-Warriors series Wednesday from Oakland. Basketball Central at 8:30 p.m. Tip-off will be just after 9 on Sportsnet Ontario. That's going to be another one. Making it hard on me. Late night. The Raptors losing last night 109-104 to the Golden State Warriors. We have spent the better part of the show sort of poking through the embers of that particular game. Looking ahead as well to Game 3. And, you know, I my kind of takeaway from game two was
a greater appreciation for the Golden State Warriors. I keep getting back to what Andre Iguodala said. I think I'm as guilty as anybody of just sort of looking at Golden State and thinking, boy, they're really good. They overpower everybody. They win a lot of games. Sometimes we do have a tendency to overlook the work that goes into that. You know, the work that goes into being able to play, as many games in as many seasons as the Warriors have done. And that's what happens when you go on a long Stanley Cup ride. I mean, the only, you know, I keep looking at the Chicago Blackhawks and that run of success, that recent run of success they had, and how beaten up they were, and how eventually they just got to the point where, you know, it was just too much hockey, too much high intensity hockey, too much hockey where everything is on the line for every second of the game. And then you look at Golden State and see that their level of excellence is even greater than that of the Blackhawks. And then you see them up close, like we saw them last night, and you see one of those games where Steph Curry's ill and Klay Thompson gets hurt and they're already shorthanded because they don't have Kevin Durant. But man, somebody makes a play, whether it's defensively or offensively. Somebody makes a play, and you really get a sense, I think, of what it takes and what it means to be a championship team when you watch the Golden State Warriors play. Arash Madani of Sportsnet is covering the NBA Finals for us, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mr. Madani, every time I look up, you're on TV asking questions. You're enjoying this, aren't you?
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been real fun. And Jeff, I rewatched the last sequence, the last 26 seconds, about 20 times last night, because I was just listening to what you're saying about the Warriors making a play. And what stood out to me were a few things. One was awareness of the situation, the clock, the score, and the anticipation of what kind of defense was ahead. That with 28 seconds, you probably, if you're the defense, you probably let them play. If it's under 24 seconds, you're probably anticipating a foul.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 26 seconds is a little bit of no man's land.
It's right, it's in between, area. Right? Yep.
And so who's on the floor? Well, Curry's on the floor and Draymond's on the floor. And that's Sean Livingston's on the floor. And, of course, Iguodala, who hit the shot. And if you rewatch it, to me, the play that was made there, the Raptors trapped, they tried to force the turnovers. They did it to Draymond, they did it to Steph. But then there was, ultimately, it was Livingston who found Iguodala. But there was a flailing pass in Sean Livingston's direction that Kawhi very easily could have picked off in a two-point game. And Livingston attacked the ball, positioned his body to almost box Leonard out, to make the catch, to make the, you know, to make sure there's no turnover on that play, then fires it over to Iguodala, who looked around.
Mm.
And, again, know the situation. There's 7 seconds left. You're up two. If I hit this shot, it's game over. If I miss this shot, we could be looking at overtime or a win. And Iguodala looked around, looked at the hoop, looked around one more time, and then pulled the trigger. But I really thought that the play Sean Livingston made to avoid the turnover and then ultimately set up the assist, in a situation where there was some unknown, really showed the poise of a Golden State team that's been there before and understood. Bill Belichick always talks about situational football. Warriors understood situational basketball there.
Yeah, you know, we use the phrase court awareness, and boy, oh boy, yeah. they've got it. They've got it, not just sort of in the rhetorical sense, but in the literal sense as well.
Yeah.
You know what I've my assignment for sportsnet.ca has been to spend some time in the visitors' locker room during these first two games. And which is great, cuz I've always told people
the NBA players, when it comes to the superstars, the NBA superstars are the best players to deal with, the best players to be around.
Not even close.
Yeah, and even during the playoffs, it's remarkable how much, you know, how accessible they are. And
Kawhi and Steph at the podium every day.
Exactly. But, you know, I was thinking about this last night. There are two times that I've gone into a locker room and I've looked at guys and thought, Jesus, these guys are beaten up. Once, went into the Red Wings locker room during one of their playoff runs, and that was when they were the old crusty Red Wings, right? They had Zetterberg and all these guys. And, I mean, it was like a mash ward. There were guys with scrapes and ice bags everywhere and, you know, bloody bandages. I mean, it looked, you know, you're looking at guys who've literally been through the meat grinder. You almost get the same thing with Golden State. Not the same. I mean, obviously, there's not as many cuts and stuff like that. But, man, I watched Andre Iguodala when we talked to him last night. I swear to God, it must have taken him about 3 minutes to take one ice bag off.
Right.
And you know, and he made the point, and I talked about this a little bit, but I think it's really significant, and I think we need to be cognizant of this now that the Raptors are in the final. The amount of stuff that goes into going to five consecutive finals or four consecutive finals and winning them, however many they're in, the amount of work that goes into that and the amount of just freaking physical pain that goes into that is remarkable. I mean, it really is.
And they've won three of the last four championships, so now they're in five straight finals. And the one they lost in game seven of the finals to LeBron.
Yeah.
So the volume of games that this Golden State team has played, nobody has since the Jordan era Bulls, and before that, Magic, Kareem, and the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in part what makes the dynasty so difficult, is just that grind, that volume, just how beat up they are. I mean, look, Golden State's a mass unit. No KD, mm-hmm. Clay with the hamstring, Steph isn't right, on and on it goes. And Toronto's banged up too. But look, the KD equivalent missing is removing Kawhi Leonard from the Raptor roster. And then where are things?
Yeah.
And amidst that, Golden State knocks out an 18-0 run, or 18-0 tear, to start the second half. What makes them so lethal is, you know, Danny Green made this point on Media Day before the series began. He said, you have to be so disciplined defensively. You have to lock every detail down. You have to be so disciplined and aware and communicate. And yet, Steph will just, you know, fire something up from 40 feet and it goes in.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you play perfect defense, it may not be enough against these guys.
And, you know, it's funny because I'm thinking back, Hubie Brown made a comment during game one about, you know, Curry and Thompson and how, you know, look, great shooters, all that stuff. But he said people underestimate how mentally wearing it is to chase these guys around. Right. For a game. And, you know, he said, and I was thinking, you know, that end of the game, I mean, you look at, you just look at the score sheet, you know, rebound, miss shot, like they thrive on sort of creating havoc with the other team. Like, the Raptors had the final 4 minutes, the Raptors had the ball an awful lot. They couldn't do a great deal with it. And that's Golden State. They get a stop, right?
That's it. Fourth quarter. Raptors with four straight stops. Nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Steve Kerr made the point, Jeff, after game one. He said 109 points is more than enough to win.
Yeah.
You know, that was their point total in game one. They matched it last night, and they did it. The understated part of Golden State, because of the way they run and the way they shoot and the way they just ignite, is that when they defend well, how different of a ball club they are. Their transition defense last night was so much better than in game one.
Yeah.
They guarded the three-point line so much better than game one. And I know Kawhi got his, but he went 16 of 16 from the free throw line. He was 8 of 20 from the floor. I mean, they were hounding Leonard. So they did the same in game one, except Van Vliet hit his shots and Gasol hit his shots and Danny Green hit his shots. to say nothing of Siakam's 32. But outside of the alley-oop, do you really remember Siakam doing much last night?
No.
Beyond Gasol hitting a three at the top of the key early in the game, do you remember even hearing Marc Gasol's name?
Mm-hmm.
And so very kind of quietly, Golden State locked it down defensively on top of just how explosive they can be on the offensive end.
Hey, Rash, when this series is over, however it ends, you know, whether the Raptors win or have lost, you know, look, it goes without saying that something pretty significant has happened in Canadian sports with this final. Is this final enough to continue the change we're seeing in our sports culture in this country? I'll rephrase that. What impact does this have in terms of the change in sports culture we're starting to see in this country? You know, we had the roundtable Friday. Sorry to interrupt, but we had the roundtable Friday, and I asked Sherm. We had Sherm Hamilton on, and I said to Sherm, "All right, you know what needs." Basketball is in a tremendous period of growth in this country. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the numbers are there. You know, Kia Nurse is now a brand ambassador. I mean, all that stuff.
Sure.
And I said, what's the next step? And he said, Sherman said very quickly, the next step is to have success internationally. That's probably the next big step that needs to be taken. But where does this final, what is it accomplishing in that sort of transition or that change we're seeing in Canadian sports culture around?
Well, I think it's significant on two fronts. I think it's significant on the grassroots level, which I'll get into in a minute. But I think beyond that, I think it's kind of trickled in and infiltrated into the sports conscience of the Joe and Jane sports fan across the country, that they may now pay closer attention to the Raptors than to basketball moving forward. And, you know, what blew me away was yesterday somebody from MLSE telling me, Jeff, across the country yesterday, there were 40 outdoor viewing parties in different cities.
Mm-hmm.
There were 40 Jurassic Parks. Now, imagine I came on the radio with you a year ago at this time and said, that's what would be happening with basketball across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I almost wonder if what the Raptors are doing now is what the Jays did in 92-93,
mm-hmm.
because they're the only team.
Right.
Look, if the Leafs made the Cup Final, it'd be huge in Ontario. It'd be huge in southwestern Ontario. It'd be huge in Toronto. But it wouldn't be across Canada. People may watch, but more people in Canada dislike the Leafs than like the Leafs. This has become Canada's team. So from a grassroots standpoint, I still think it's going to take some time. You know, the first kind of explosion of it, the Vince Carter generation, we never saw coming what was brewing beneath the surface. The Andrew Wigginses and the Jamal Murrays and the Anthony Bennetts and the Nick Stauskases and on it goes. You know, a kid right now who's 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, who's watching all of this, who wants to be the next Kawhi Leonard, who wants to be the next Kyle Lowry, I think there's going to be bigger participation and more stars coming, but it's going to take some time to get there only because it's just a generational thing. I know you hate tennis, but tennis has gone down that road too.
Mm.
That Milos and Bouchard were one of the first.
Right.
And now, you know, Shapovalov and Felix Auger-Aliassime and Bianca said, you know, I remember watching them play.
Yeah.
So I think from a grassroots standpoint, it's going to make an impact. And then in the general sports landscape, it's an impact. And I just hope the sport's ready. I hope there's going to be enough coaches, enough facilities, enough, you know, organizationally, that there's a backbone built to make sure these kids are ready to rock when they want to play competitively.
Yeah, you know, because it's one of the things that I think one of the, I don't know if I'd call it a failure of soccer in this country, but soccer experienced a tremendous boom, and certainly women's soccer did after the
London Olympics.
And also no, even after the competition in Edmonton,
right.
And you know, you talk to people, and they'll tell you we just weren't ready for it. Like,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things John Herdman talks about is the number of the number of players he knows have kind of slipped through the cracks, right? Because soccer just wasn't ready for to handle the influx of kids. And it's a challenge in this country because it's so wide, right? I mean, we're so spread out. And but what fascinates me about these sort of mini Jurassic Parks too is it seems to me that by and large they're organic. You know, it's not it's sure. Somebody deciding, hey, this looks cool, let's have one in our city. Or
right.
You know, which is, man, when you can get and especially this day and age, because stuff travels with social media. You know, if you can kind of glom onto that and keep it going, like that's the type of stuff that really sets down deep roots, not just in, you know, in the game, but in the culture of the country.
Yeah, no question. And this isn't an LFC behind it. It's not the Raptors behind it. It's not a brewery or a, you know, a Tim Hortons behind it. You're right. This is each community getting on board with it. And really, in a lot of ways, even though Canada basketball with Nurse, with Jamal Murray, with RJ Barrett, even though they're on the map, I think this can just elevate it further.
Mm. Arash, it was great of you to join us, man. Thanks so much.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Arash Madani of Sportsnet. And again, game 3 of the NBA Finals goes Wednesday from Oakland, from the Oracle Arena. We'll have the game tip off at 9 o'clock on Sportsnet. Ontario. I'm sorry, on Sportsnet. Tim and Stead will have their extendo pregame show. I sound like Wilner there. We'll have their extended pregame show at 6 p.m. Basketball Central at 8:30 on Sportsnet Ontario. And then, as I mentioned, tip off just after 9 on Sportsnet Ontario. And we'll have a pregame show for you, The Wrap, presented by Comda.com with Russick and Marchese right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Want to mention that the Jays have today off. They will start a series, three-game series against the New York Yankees tomorrow. Masahiro Tanaka on the mound against Clayton Richard. First pitch will be just after 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet Ontario, as the Blue Jays, who've lost 6 in a row and 10 of 11 following their weekend sweep in Denver, look to get something going against the Yankees, who are just rampaging right now. This is the first time they've played this year, the Yankees and the Jays. It's like we're 60-odd games in or something like that. And it's the first time these teams have met. So that's bad news, because it means that the majority of Jays games against the Yankees are going to be against a fully healthy Yankees team. As Dellin Betances, Aaron Judge, Didi Gregorius all take steps towards returning to the lineup. It was, there's been a whole lot of Gio Urshela going on with the New York Yankees during this run. As I mentioned this weekend, Rick Porcello of the Boston Red Sox he didn't raise the white flag, but he commented to some Boston writers, you know, I'm not sure that we're really closing the gap on these guys. And boy, if the Red Sox can't do it, I don't know if anybody will be able to do it. So anyhow, Yankees and Blue Jays three-game series starting tomorrow. Masahiro Tanaka, who pitches pretty well here against Clayton Richard. We are going to step away. When we come back, we'll continue our Raptors discussion. Sid Sixero from Tim and Sid will join us. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Puck drop is just after 8. Hockey Central pregame at 7:30. Game 3 of the NBA Finals goes Wednesday from Oakland. The Raptors and the Warriors, they are tied up at one game apiece after the Warriors 109-104 Game 2 win over the Raptors last night at Scotiabank Arena. Tip-off will be at 9 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario for Game 3. And I want to remind you to be listening all day for the keywords to text us for your chance at Lower Bowl tickets to Game 5 of the NBA Finals. This is your shot at seeing the Raptors in their first ever NBA Finals host the Golden State Warriors. Again, these are Lower Bowl tickets. Go to sportsnet.ca/590 for full details on how you can enter this contest. And as I mentioned, get a chance to see the Raptors in the finals. Because you know how often it's going to come around. I mean, it's not like you're a Golden State fan where it's kind of an annual, where it's kind of an annual occurrence. You heard Arash Madani on with me before the break, and we were talking about the how there are now 40 versions of Jurassic Park around the country, specifically outdoor viewing parties for Raptors games. And, you know, this is the thing that makes us so special is that in most cases they are organic. As I said, I'm sure in most cases they're kind of fueled by social media. A lot of the pictures from Jurassic Park that have been shared, you know, they've gone viral, I'm sure has created that sense of awareness around the country. And as a result, we've seen, as we mentioned, almost 40 different communities have these viewing parties, and they're not all just in Southern Ontario. It's a testament to the growth of the sport in this country. It's a testament to the growth of the Raptors brand. And, you know, I think the two kind of go hand in hand in that until the Canadian men's program, you know, experiences a degree of international success, it's going to be the Raptors that are essentially going to be carrying the torch of the sport in this country. As I mentioned with Arash, I hosted the Friday roundtable last week with Eric Smith and Sherman Hamilton. It was interesting, you know, and Sherman's part of the Canadian basketball mafia, as I call them. You know, those guys who were honing their craft in gymnasiums and you know, teaching clinics and things of that nature while the rest of us were watching hockey. And Sherm's point was when I asked him, what is the next necessary step for basketball to expand its imprint in this country? And his point was international success, the Canadian men's team. And this is not to slight the Canadian women's team. The Canadian men's team has to get it together, has to have a good international competition. We're that type of country. There are parts of this country that will be watching the Raptors that may not have any emotional currency invested in that team. It's a Canadian team, so we're going to watch them. But when you see a team full of guys with the maple leaf in their chest, that's where I think the overwhelming number of Canadians start to be invested. I mean, we'll watch anybody in any sport if they have the maple leaf on their chest. So that's a starting off point to continue our conversation, actually, with Sid Sixero of Tim and Sid. Sid, thank you so much for joining us today. Look, I know you guys spend a lot of time around Jurassic Park. You're very, very active on social media.
Has Jurassic, you know, the thing that kind of amazed me about Jurassic Park is, you know, it's become a little more regulated, right? You know, you got, you know, just because of the numbers, they've had to regulate it. But yet it's weird when I see those pictures, there's still, and I know there's a stage there and there's music now and everything and people are giving away shirts and all that, but there's still an organic thing happening there, isn't it?
Well, when you get guys waiting in line at 12:30 in the morning the night before, you're bang on. Like, it's, you're right. Like, that Coors Light stand wasn't there when it started. Mm-hmm. That full on stage wasn't there when it started. It has grown into an MLSC production because someone in MLSC said, "Oh, this is kind of cool.
Right.
Let's make some money off it." And they are. But that organicness, like, for game one, Jeff, I walked, before the show started last Thursday, I walked to the front of the line to get in Jurassic Park because there were some rumors about exactly who was in line and when they got in there first.
Mm-hmm.
There were three buddies, early 20s. They got there at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them why, and they just said, "We the North." And I'm like, well, that's a good answer. And despite all the signage and everything they've done with it down at Jurassic Park, and it has changed drastically, you're still getting the fan down there, which will always keep it very organic, very organic. And couple that with, and just because I'm from Mississauga, the 25,000 or whatever it was by Square One in Celebration Square last night, I don't remember this with the Jays. You're not going to see anything like this with any NHL club because it's still kind of polarizing in certain aspects of the country. But other than an Olympics, I don't remember this. I'm just trying to cite the example, the comparison to somebody the other day, and I couldn't do it. But the one thing that I keep thinking about is this is all really, really cool. What if they lose the final and Kawhi leaves?
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
Yeah.
Because all these peripheral basketball people that have now come in, and it's great that that's happened, they're going to ask, why did he leave? And does that hurt the brand a little bit? I know I'm jumping over some hurdles here. We're only up to game three. But I'm looking at this, Jeff, and I'm sure you are as well, saying, so how sustainable is this?
Yes.
Is this just a huge bandwagon, which you and I have seen in this country a million times, or is this real? I don't have an answer for that right now. But in terms of enjoying the ride, it's been great. And Jurassic Park down there, it's as loud and as crazy as it's ever been. And as corporate as it's turned, it's still very organic. Yeah. I think it's a fair assessment on your end. It's still a hell of a lot of fun. But when I get in line at 12:30 in the morning the night before, nope. But God bless anyone who does. And it speaks to how deep rooted. And these aren't old people lining up, right?
No.
Like, this is the demographic you want. This is a marketer's dream. What is happening down at Jurassic Park and with this basketball franchise right now? So maybe it's more sustainable than I think. I worry about a huge bandwagon and trying to read too much into it because of the size of it. I just get a little worried about that.
Yeah, and I think that's why what Sherm said made sense. You kind of need, you know, I think this is a big year for basketball in Canada, not just here, but internationally as well at the World Cup. If you can have some sort of national success, that might sort of, whatever happens if Kawhi leaves, that national success might be enough to kind of keep, you know, sort of relight the fire a little more. I don't know. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I'm beginning to wonder if maybe what the Raptors are doing here isn't sustainable to the point where it can outlast Kawhi Leonard's departure. I mean, I'm not saying that if Kawhi Leonard were to depart and this team were to, you know, finish last the next 4 years in a row, that any sense of momentum would be lost. I mean, gosh, look at the Blue Jays after back-to-back playoff appearances, and look at what's happening now. You know, with attendance, and I mean, you know, the public's appetite for rebuild. This might be a little different, though. because I think, you know what, I think there's a sexiness to this sport and to this franchise that might carry it through a little bit. And I also think, Sid, the fact that this is, if Kawhi were to leave, and again, we are getting ahead of ourselves, but when has a Toronto athlete ever left this city at the height of his career with people blowing kisses at him and saying, you know, Godspeed? You know, I mean, Kawhi may get a street named after him, even if he decides to go someplace else.
Yeah, because I mean, the Vince Carter era didn't end that way, certainly.
Mm-mm.
That was the complete opposite of that. So, no, this would be a case study unlike we've ever seen for the market of Toronto, where in unison as of right now, and we still don't know his health situation in this moment, but as of right now, find me the person who doesn't think bringing Kawhi Leonard back is a good idea.
Yeah.
Find me the person who's negative on that. You can't do it. I don't care if you follow basketball for 30 years or you've been a fan for the last week.
No.
You cannot do it. In that environment, would Masai lose his guy? I don't know. I bet on Masai on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like betting against Masai in a situation like this. I would bet that he keeps his dude. And if you're rolling with Barack Obama, why not?
I know.
How are you going to say no to the guy who's rolling with Barack? How do you do that?
I keep referring to the interview you guys had with Kenny Smith, and I thought it was interesting coming from a basketball player. It's like, how do you sink that shot against the Sixers and then look Masai in the eye and say, you know, this was great. I had a great year. You guys took care of me, but, you know, I want to go to the Clippers.
I really want to play with Montrezl Harrell. Like, are you really going to say that? Like, I know it's not what it's about. I'm just joking around, but I still see him staying, but there's too many unknowns with him in this situation where I'm still kind of struggling with, well, clearly basketball has changed forever. You bring up the World Cup in China coming up in August and September. Let's say Canada makes it to the gold medal game.
Oh.
First off, those games are going to be in the middle of the night. Second, unless you stream them on the zone, you're not going to see them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And this is my biggest beef right now with Canada basketball. I don't know the intricacies, and Glenn Grunwald would know that more than I now. But if you want to really push Canadian international basketball along, you got to get it on normal television.
Mm-hmm.
And spare me the, well, this is the future, this and that. I get it. But it's not there right now. So if you're going to have people pay attention to that tournament the way you want, your current system is flawed in a serious way. Like, I have a fear that they could silver medal in that World Cup, the Canadian men's team, and it would be not an afterthought but close in this country because no one has any attachment to it.
That'd be a shame.
And I think it would be a damn shame, but could you not see it happening? How many people in late August, over 45 to 50 years old, are going to get up in the middle of the night and stream to zone?
No, that is true. When you look at the time, you factor in. It's like anything else. You want to make your stuff as easy as possible for as many people
Correct.
To get to it. And if it takes
Correct.
If it takes me three steps to get to something, I may get bored after the first step, especially at 3 a.m. and say, screw this. I'll wait and find out what happened online. That would concern me. I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't thought of that as I was going on and on about the importance of international basketball.
But for guys like you and me, it's irrelevant because it's irrelevant for us because we'll find it.
Yeah.
And for guys like Sherman, like there's a whole crew of people in this country where it's irrelevant. They will find those games. But to continue this momentum in terms of mainstream sports fans, I don't know what that tournament's going to do considering the logistics involved. I'm a little concerned about that. But whatever. I mean, I wish those guys nothing but the best, and I think it's going to be great. But I think there are a lot of variables in this basketball renaissance, quote-unquote, that we're seeing that are walking along a bit of a tightrope here. And everyone's having such a good time, no one wants to acknowledge it.
Hmm. So, Sid,
Go ahead. I'm just saying, who's to say if Kawhi leaves and if the rebuild starts?
Yeah.
Like, what if Masai trades Kyle? Kyle's a year left on a contract. An expiring $30 million on a cap is pretty enticing to a lot of teams, especially on a point guard who was just in an NBA final.
Right.
I don't know. Like, there's a lot of things that could happen here if the Raptors don't win and Kawhi doesn't stick around. But whatever. I don't want to be that guy. It's a hell of a run. Last night's game, as flawed as it was still a lot of fun to watch. And everyone just enjoy it. But I think the big picture basketball discussion is a fascinating one to me right now.
So do you think, I mean, we know that, you know, the Golden State Warriors are going to be going home thinking, well, we accomplished what we wanted to, split two games in Toronto, didn't have Kevin Durant, buys us some time if we need it to get Kevin Durant ready. Certainly the tone of the discussion around Kevin Durant's availability changes dramatically if they're down 0-2 compared to 1-1. What do you think the Raptors will take away from this going to Golden State? You know, from my point of view, Sid, they were as good as or better than Golden State in 7 of 8 quarters so far. Now, they were really steamrolled in that one quarter. But 7 of 8, they were as good as, if not better, than Golden State.
I think the prevailing feeling was, even without Kevin Durant, can the Raptors hang with this team? Like, you have to respect what they did to Portland. Portland aren't the best team. They're not the deepest team, but they got some talent there. To sweep a team like that at that point in the season is pretty impressive. So everyone's thinking, okay, can Toronto hang? And boy, did they hang. And honestly, Jeff, I think what you saw at the start of the third quarter last night was a Raptors team who, for the first time in these finals, were comfortable. Because you're right. They basically won 6 straight quarters against this crew. They came out of halftime, and that hunger wasn't there. I don't know what was said in the Warriors' room. I don't know what wasn't said in the Raptors' room. And I don't want to hear that, well, there's not a lot of people. People are coming back from concessions and this and that. I don't give a damn about that. Play.
Right.
If you need people in their seats, if you need people in their seats like that to start a half, you got a bigger problem than we think. So just play the game. Don't worry about the fans in the seats. And I saw a Raptors team that were, honest to God, for the first time in the series, confident. Because in the previous 6 quarters, they didn't play scared, but they had urgency in everything they did,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, and it showed on the scoreboard. And that's what you need. And I saw a comfortable group early in the third, and it cost them the game. It wasn't the officials. It wasn't Andre Iguodala late. It wasn't the Kyle Lowry foul. We can talk about all that. It's all irrelevant. You lose by 5, and you give up an 18-0 run to start a half. That's the math says that's where you lost the game.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling, Jeff, we might be looking back at the start of that third quarter as a blessing for the team, as a wake-up call that they needed in that moment, as if to say, I understand you're up a game and you're up at half of the second game. That's – they're going for a three-peat over there. You better wake the hell up.
Yeah. They.
And I think that's what we saw there. I think it's a lot more simple than we think.
Yeah.
They were just confident, and they got burned.
Well, and I'm sure, look, those guys are on the court. They can see, you know, they saw that Steph wasn't himself in the first quarter. I mean, he was gasping for air. You know, they know that Boogie Cousins is making his first start, his first appearance, or his first start, I should say, in 6 weeks. Like, I hate to say it. Yeah, they're Golden State, but if you're the Raptors, there's a little bit of reason to be a little self-satisfied at that point, you know. And I think you're right. It's just a reminder, as Andre Iguodala said, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into where we are. You guys don't see it all the time. You just see the runs and the wins, and we overpower people. But there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes to getting to where the Golden State Warriors are, and I think we saw that.
I think you're right. Are we going to talk Women's World Cup this week, or what's the deal? What's going on?
We will talk Women's World Cup. We will definitely get you on to have that conversation.
Let's go. Christine St. Clair, this is the swan song. This is it. I have a good feeling about this one, Jeff.
You
do?
Good
feeling.
All righty. We'll talk about it. Thanks,
Ed. For her to break the record. I don't know if they're going to win the tournament, but she'll break the record.
We'll talk about it. Thanks, man.
All right. See you, brother.
Yeah. Sid Sixero of Tim and Sid. So that is it for the Blair Show. Don't forget, Baseball Central will return once the Raptors series is over, once the NBA Finals are over against the Golden State Warriors. We'll get Barker on at some point this week to talk Blue Jays baseball. The Jays and the Yankees starting a 3-game series tomorrow night at the Rogers Center. Stanley Cup final on tonight. Game four, Boston leading that series 2-1. They're still in St. Louis. It'll be tonight on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Puck drop is just after 8 o'clock. That's it for us. Have a great day, everybody.